What is good, people, and welcome back to the Hype Report. Now, today is a very special episode as I'm joined with a very good guest. We've kind of moved to a bit of a guest format now. So I introduce to you Sneaker Den, also known as Dennis. What's good, bro?
Other way around.
Oh, yes.
But it works. It works.
What a professional stuff.
It works.
What's good, bro?
What's up, man? Thanks for having me.
No, thanks for coming, bro. Like I said before, I'm a big fan, and you've done some really interesting stuff. So tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do in the sneaker space.
So I sell mainly, like, my main activity is selling vintage kicks, mm-hmm. like on the rarer end of things. Started with Dunks, but now I do a lot of vintage Air Force Ones, 85 Jordans, and other stuff like Sean Carter's, Ice Creams, just the old stuff like 2000s, mm-hmm. 90s.
Yeah.
And I like to say that I'm not just a seller. I also like curate and like create content and inform.
Mm.
And I have a brand as well, Outsole. So got to plug that in.
I mean, yeah, it's definitely not a traditional reseller.
Oh, yeah.
You definitely do some crazy bits. And we've got some bits here today that we'll go into later. And they are pretty wild. I mean, how did you actually get into this space? Like, how did you get into reselling?
So it went pretty quick. I mean, I got into sneakers end of 2018, early 2019, through a couple of friends of mine on my basketball team who were already pretty much, you know, sneakerheads.
Yeah,
I don't know, they kind of showed me the way. Like, I asked them a bunch of questions, like, wait, how does this work? Like, you know, how'd you get these limited drops,
blah, blah, blah.
And then did it a little bit, like, on the side, you know, just signing up to raffles, like, mm-hmm. hit on a few pairs, made maybe 1,000 pounds in a year, wins you get. And then the kind of real turning point was when the off-white Dunks were kind of rumored, trio.
So they were the red pair, the Michigans
and the pine greens.
That's it.
By then, I knew the impact that Virgil had on, like, popularity of, like, Jordan 1s and Jordan 1s were popping, and I didn't know anything about Dunks. And I remember the Jeff Staple Panda Pigeon that came out that year, 2019, which kind of put the Dunks on my map, but I didn't know anything about Dunks. And when I saw the off-white leaks, I was like, wow, these are fire. These look super similar to Jordan 1s, but no one is really paying attention to this silhouette right now. So I just started digging into Dunks and discovered that you could find super good deals on older pairs, just because in 2019, Dunks hadn't been brought back by Nike yet.
Yeah.
Like, the latest releases, well, you had SB all the time, but SB was kind of still sleeping at that time.
Yeah.
Regular Dunks were not a thing. No one was wearing Dunks. Yeah. So I got into it deep quite quickly. And then I just trusted the fact that they were going to make a comeback, because Virgil was doing that collab. And then obviously the Travis SBs came out. And then what happened.
The Dunk hype was insane.
It
was absolutely crazy. I mean, like you said, the SBs have obviously had a core following for ages, but yeah, like back when I was getting into it, I don't know what year that was now, but like you said, there was no one was wearing Dunks.
Yeah.
I initially was a lot more streetwear and sneakers, but even if I was to go to like a Supreme drop and queue up, no one would be wearing Dunks.
Yeah.
No one would be wearing regular Dunks. And then all of a sudden, like, it was just insane. Like, it was crazy. Like, regular people were like so desperate. Like, not even like proper sneakers. Like, anyone wanted to get a pair of Dunk Lows.
Yeah. Dunk Highs as well. Dunk High. I mean, I sold some regular Dunks from like 10, 15 years ago when they weren't available yet because Nike hadn't brought back everything. Mm. Like, that early 2020. Well, the whole year of 2020 was just crazy because COVID. Because Dunks weren't available like that. Like, Nike had only brought back like the Syracuse Dunks and the Kentuckys and like a few here and there, but they hadn't started like mass producing them.
Yeah.
And people were just hungry for Dunks. So it was crazy.
Yeah, I think going back to the COVID point, one thing that really boomed like the sneaker culture in general in 2020 was the fact that over here we had like furlough. So people think people had less money in COVID. Well, initially people actually had more because no one was going out.
Yeah.
No one was spending, you know, anything at the weekend or whatever. So people were buying materialistic shit to basically cover up for their boredom, which was completely fair. That's completely fair enough.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was so easy for a trend to spark a couple of like...
Yeah. It was the perfect... It's something that's probably never going to happen again to that extent, because there's no, I don't see any other silhouette that has the potential that the Dunk had in terms of being liked by masses.
So universal.
So universal and so slept on. You're never going to have that boom again from like going from a pair that was available for £30 on Depop, eBay, from, you know, 2003, 2010, like cool stuff to then being so hyped, you know, it was crazy. So I kind of, I was lucky to be in that moment, but yeah, like, it was a unique time.
How do you feel about, platforms like TikTok, like booming, like the sneaker? Do you think TikTok had an impact on the sneaker game? Like the demand for it?
Honestly, like, I'm not a big TikTok person. Like, I struggle to create or interact on there. I'm so much more comfortable on Instagram. But Instagram, like, from my experience, because especially during COVID, like, I was even less so focused on TikTok, because TikTok kind of came a bit later in the sense that you weren't, like, you had to get on there. You know what I mean? Like, when Instagram started focusing on reels and things like that, like, you had to make at least some sort of leap to TikTok. Yes. But, like, when I started, it was Instagram, but, of course, COVID as well. Everyone's on social media, so everyone's... you know, you can't rock shit in the street, so you're gonna show it off on social media. It's gonna create that hype as well.
I think Instagram and TikTok have very similar effects on the on the game, and it definitely boomed it. Or it definitely had maybe not increased, but for the regular sneakerheads, people in it who were into sneakers previously. But I think in terms of bringing new people to the space,
for sure.
I think just because it was so easy to come across content and sneaker, people were like, oh shit, you know, I'll get involved. And obviously that had a massive spark to the trend.
And even, I mean, I remember, like, I had a lot of, you know, customer created content for me on my Instagram as well, because people were excited to share stuff on social media. When they got new stuff, they'd go like outside, take pictures or something and post them, which is less the case now because now you have a real life where... you have less time to you know, post. You have less need to post because you meet people in real life. But back then, it was, you know, social media was it. So, I mean, combination of everything was crazy.
I mean, I know you sold some shoes to big celebrities, some rappers, music artists, basketball players, whatever. Did the majority of them come through social media?
I mean, all of them initially, the contact was made on Instagram.
And they just, so let's say, how did they get in touch?
They checked DMs.
They just reached you?
I mean, there's been a few who've messaged me first, but I mean, to be honest, I reach out for the most part. But it helps when, like, you know, you got to start somewhere, obviously, but then... as things progress, you have more mutuals, like they can see that their friends, the people that are in their circle follow me or have reposted me, or like trusted pages, like, you know, the sneaker blogs or like Hidden New York was huge for me as well during COVID. So that brought me some people, some eyes for sure.
Sick.
And then, I mean, Instagram is a powerful tool. So,
Who are, if you don't mind me asking this, and you might have to be a little bit private about it, but who are like the kind of, who is the biggest celebrity you've sold a shoe to?
I mean, it's I guess like in terms of Instagram following, because otherwise it's difficult to rank, but like the Migos, Lil Yachty, a few like Leroy Sané.
That's crazy.
I don't know, like Daniel Arsham.
Yeah, he's cool. Yeah, he's cool.
I mean, yeah, Virgil technically didn't buy from me, but I got him a pair.
Nice.
And I mean, yeah, music industry, quite a few people. I just had a super random encounter in LA with Rich the Kid, and he like grabbed three pairs, just like these hip hop circles. There's so many mutuals across the industry that as when you get your foot in the door, then people kind of trust you and the word goes around. So
that's crazy. So what is the craziest pair someone's bought? Like what a rapper's bought of you or someone like of who's relevant?
I mean, like I think that the craziest, generally the real craziest pairs in terms of value, go to rich guys, not celebrities. So there's a difference between real wealth and athletes and rappers and athletes. I'd say that, yeah, they can go up to $10,000, but like it's going to be on a very rare occasion that they're going to do that. Like, you know, anything above 5,000 is going to cool them off. Whereas like the pairs that are going to go for 20,000-30,000, like that's people who really, you know, have money and it's kind of like art collectors and things like that who consume sneakers kind of in a different way than these guys who buy shoes at the end of the day to rock them. And they're not going to spend, like, it's weird because sometimes it doesn't make sense. You think like they're going to spend X amount of money on like, you know, LV bags and like flex all this cash and everything. But like, they're not going to spend $10,000 on a shoe easily. Like it's still perceived as sneakers. It's not, it's less of a luxury item than, you know, all the designer stuff that they are gonna spend tens of thousands of dollars on. So
that's crazy.
Yeah, and obviously it's always, I mean, so many stories of discovering a bit of the personalities of each of these guys, like how stingy they are, how not stingy they are, and how they do business and how they are just as people, kind of like you know, doing business with someone, you learn a lot about.
Yeah, especially when money's
how reliable they are. And
yeah, for sure. Yeah. Who is the person you've enjoyed selling a shoe to the most?
From that kind of, I mean, like, to be honest, like for the most part, it's a challenge. Like it's not a drive in the park, you know, like when you deal with these types of clients, like they can be quite, you know, like they're used to having stuff. I don't know. They're them, you know, they think, you know, it's, kind of the world revolves around them. So like sometimes it can be challenging. It's nice when it's smooth, you know, but it's rarely going to be anything like, I mean, yeah, Offset from all the people, he hasn't actually bought from me, but I've met him a few times and he's the most, like, he's super genuine and nice in person.
Yeah.
As opposed to some other people that I've encountered, but then again, like when it comes to actually messaging, you know, it's going to be tougher to get a reply and stuff. So it's a lot of like chasing and things like that, but it's part of the game.
You know? Yeah, for sure, man. So in terms of going back a little bit to traditional reselling and like the money, like movement of it, what is the most profit you have made on one particular sale? Like one shoe, no bundle deal, just one pair of kicks. Because there is a bit of a there is a bit of a misconception around how much money you can actually make reselling. Like, I think everyone, especially a few years ago, people outside the space would be like, damn, he's a reseller, he must be absolutely balling, when the reality is that the margins aren't always that crazy. But I guess it really
I'd
depends.
Say the margins can be crazy in the vintage.
Yeah,
I sure. mean, yeah, vintage maybe doesn't do it justice. The really rare, hard to find stuff.
And is that because there is less on, just simply because there's less on the market?
There's, the seller can dictate his price more, because there's just less availability. Yeah, you can't go compare. Like, oh, StockX has this price, or eBay, like, you just can't. Yeah. So, yeah. There is still, like, on the, you know, older SBs, there is most definitely a market that's more or less transparent, like, maybe less than the general stuff. But, like, you can still say, like, I don't know, a Stussy Cherry SB.
Mm.
Like, you can't sell that for $5,000. Like, you know the value is going to be anywhere between, like, one and three, depending on the condition, and that's the market. And, like, there is alternatives, like other sellers, eBay, things like that, where you can't just make up a price. But with the real, real rare stuff that you can't find, you know, then that's where you can get a good deal on the buy end because the seller doesn't know how much, and then a good deal on the other end because same, like, you can't, it's just not something you can find. So you can make crazy margins with in that niche. Not, I don't think that in the traditional reselling game because it's so much more competitive. Like, if your price is too high, people are just going to buy from someone else. So, which is not the case in my niche.
No, definitely. Yeah, I mean, like you said, I mean, even when I buy shoes now, or when we sell crepes, we have to look, basically, to get the market price, you have to look on multiple platforms.
Yeah, compare
all over everything. The place. Which is it's a good thing, and it makes it entertaining, I guess. It's just what it is. So what is the most profitable pair?
I mean, that was a crazy one, but it was about like $13,000. Yeah.
And what pair was that?
Can't say. But on the more, like, regular base, you know, it can go up to a few thousand, like 4,000 a pair or something.
It's good.
If you sell a pair for, I don't know, 7 or 8, you know, you might have gotten for 4, you know.
So, and I imagine with selling, like, vintage crepes, there is a bit more of a, you're sitting on them a bit longer, I imagine, once you're waiting for a client.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's something that I have to improve on, with, you know, turning around, stock, just because I buy much quicker than I sell, because the margins are bigger than in the traditional game. But you have to wait a bit longer. So as soon as I sell and I have money to invest, I'm going to buy. But then the sales are not going to, like, turn over that quickly. I mean, it, you know, it's consistent. But in terms of speed of purchase versus sale, it's could be quicker. So I do sit on some stuff. And some stuff I don't mind holding on to. Like, some stuff I buy with the intention of selling at one point, but I like owning it just because I know it's not something I'm going to find again, because I always do, you know, pop-ups and things like that it's going to be useful to just display and show more, like, as an exhibition thing. So some stuff is not, like, something that I buy for myself, but it's not something that I'm looking to sell until I need it, or I get an offer that I can't refuse or something like that. Just because I know it's something it's a solid investment. It could only go up in price, and I just like owning it. So
yeah, that's sick. I guess that type of niche in sneakers is a lot more collectible realm. It behaves a lot more like a collectible, art. Like, sure. People don't like my parents, for example. I was telling them about you coming on today, and I was showing them they do take a genuine interest in what I do. But even like what I like, the space I'm in now, which is a lot more common sneakers and a lot more common, like, hype stuff, right? So a lot more well-known stuff. They still don't understand it, and don't understand how, like, a Supreme, for example, really basic example, but Box logos are releasing this week. The good colorways will go for, I don't know, £50 more profit. They just don't, they can't comprehend how it works. So yeah, man.
It's supply and demand.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I try to tell them that, and they've finally, years and years and years of me being around the space and now making a career on it in this weird niche, which is amazing, by the way. They are kind of getting to, but they still have absolutely no idea what I do. I mean,
It's my parents also just can't wrap their hand around the fact that I'm selling sneakers for, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. They're like, just doesn't make sense.
But I mean, that's good. And a good example is like shit like this, so like the Bear Bricks and weird collectibles like that. Like they come to my apartment and they're like, Jack, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, what on earth is that? I just explained to him, well, you know, it's not going to lose value, so you know, I might lose like a little bit on it, but it's not like I've know, it's you can be pretty smart with it.
There's always going to be people wanting this stuff, exactly. So, and it's limited, so but not everything goes up in value. You got to be smart. I've made some mistakes holding on to stuff for too long and things, so.
So on to that subject about your kind of like personal mistakes, what advice would you give to someone who genuinely wants to get into reselling right now? Maybe just not so much vintage stuff, but just like more surface level reselling, just sneaker reselling.
I'd say, I mean, customer service is the number one.
Yeah.
You guys probably know that, and in terms of more like strategy, I'd say like don't sit on stock for too long. I think that a lot of people think they're sitting on gold sometimes, and it's like, just keep it moving, you know, like markets do change. You don't want to get stuck with things that, you know, I'm sure, like, I was surprised. I don't follow the regular dunk market, like the recent releases, but like, I remember these dunks, like Dark Curry, I think, Dunk Lows, that I just remember they were, I don't know, like $400 maybe 2 years ago, because it was like earthy tones were super cool, like popular, and like it was a clean Dunk Low and everything. And I looked them up and they're like 150, because they probably re-released them just like they did with Syracuse dunks and everything.
Yes.
And I'm just thinking, there must have been so many people who lost money on this, you know. And it's like, you know, hold on to stuff that is really, really valuable and unique and cool, and that's not going to retro. You know it, you know, like, or even, I mean, like, 1985 Jordan 1s, you know, like I've had a person that was drove me so crazy. Like I was doing a pop-up in Paris, and this one like random American guy asked me how much the 85 Chicagos are, brand new pair, and I'm like $12,000, and he's like, they're retroing at the end of the year, and I'm like, bro,
like,
yeah, you know, you're talking nonsense. But so there's rare occasions where, because you have that like X factor, you know, OG or super limited or super special story, you can hold on to that. But like the more regular stuff, like keep it moving. It's don't hold out for the extra £20. Like, oh no, I'm gonna refuse this offer. Like, just that's my main thing.
Just keep reinvesting.
Keep reinvesting. Take when you have customers, take that.
Yeah,
and it's gonna be a returning customer if he likes the service and everything.
Yeah, I mean that's a good point. I mean, even with what we do now with Kicks Force, it's such a new baby company, and it's just such a small scale, and it's a lot different. Although it's sneakers, it's so different to what you do. But the one common theme is those reoccurring customers. One, if you get their shoes shipped out on time, they come in decent condition, and you're just nice and polite to them, and treat them not like a customer, but like a human.
Yeah.
Then it is not like a business transaction time, you know?
Yeah. I'm still so shocked sometimes with people that I deal with who are just so difficult to deal with, you know, not very friendly, going to be super firm on prices. Like it's a business. Like, I'm a customer, even if I'm a reseller, I'm still a customer right now if I'm buying from you. So do your best to make me want to buy from you. You know, yeah. That's like number one above everything for sure. Yeah.
Sick. And in terms of moving away from reselling a little bit, in terms of your personal collection, like you definitely, I'd assume, call yourself like a sneakerhead. What is your personal collection looking like?
So it's, I'd say it's like, much more humble than my actual like inventory. Yeah. Like I struggle to spend more than, like, the most I ever spent on a pair was $800. Like, it's I don't go crazy.
That's big considering the amount you resell, like the business.
Yeah. Just because it's, first of all, like, there's always ways of like being different and finding cool stuff without necessarily buying the expensive stuff. Mm. And I think that that's something that people really, really underestimate. And they're either going to want like the cool, expensive stuff, maybe because it's cool and rare, but it's still, it has that price tag attached to it. And they're just going to do it anyways. Or they're going to say, like, I don't know, like, you know, for with the budget I have, you know, there's nothing much I can buy. Yeah. That's crazy, you know, but you can, like, for example, these shoes, Air Force Ones from 2004,
sick.
Crazy, like, you know, contrast stitching, brown midsole, like, you're not going to see,
going
to see anyone with these from 2004, 50 pounds,
yeah,
you know,
sick.
Like almost brand new. And that's what I love, you know, like finding stuff that's a bit different, without, being the traditional go-to stuff that everyone's going to go for.
Yeah. I can resonate with that a little bit. I think for me, it's, I used to be like obsessed with like looking, dressing really, really well, having the newest crepes, having the most expensive crepes. And I think this was like from like kind of Hypebeast era from like 2016 to like, I don't know, maybe 2018, 2019.
Yeah.
But now I have a good, a decent collection, quite a lot of pairs, but I would literally wear one or two a week. And that's it. The same, I've literally been wearing the what's on my feet now and a pair of New Balances because they're just so comfortable. Mm. And my style, it sounds bizarre, my style has got so much worse over the years now that I actually have a career in fact, like this weird fashion space and streetwear. Like, I get comments like, bro, your drip's dead or shit like that.
Nah,
and it's
evolved.
Like, it's evolved. Mate, I literally don't have any interest in like proportions or looking particularly good or color blocking or like matching stuff. Like, I literally just wear shit that is even from a brand. Like this is today. It's from a guy who I really like, I get on really well, like a bit of a mentor for me, is his brand. And that's it. I literally put it on, didn't think anything of it, and went out the door. And that's it. I literally, it's really weird. Really weird saying it out loud, but that's...
I mean, I do definitely care a lot about the shoes that I wear and that I buy. Like, it's not like I don't, but it's just, you know, where I... the importance for me is in having something unique that has a story that's personal as well. And I don't want to wear something just because, you know, everyone likes
it.
Like, you know, and obviously I love the vintage stuff because that, you know, represents as well what I'm about. So I'm always going to dig in the depths of eBay and things like that. So, but yeah, my sneaker collection, I think it's about like around 50 pairs, and half of it is old school stuff, and nothing too crazy.
I like what you said about the personal aspect for sure. I mean, probably a little bit of a different approach, but some of the stuff that I love now and have in my wardrobe and I will wear regularly, or maybe not even wear that much, but like I just like being in a wardrobe and stuff I'm never going to sell, is stuff that I kind of wanted back in the day, but I couldn't afford. Mm. So like a lot of that is from Supreme and Palace. So like I that's what initially got me into it. Like me and my mates would sit at college and like talk about shit that's releasing. I'll be how can people afford to spend 158 quid on the box logo? And now it's like, I'm buying a lot of that stuff that I never had back in the day. Yeah. And it's not in trend at all. It's not really that stylish anymore.
Yeah.
It's definitely not like I can't do an outfit with it on TikTok. But yeah, I think there's a lot more, the personal aspect, is a lot of people miss that.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah.
Sweet. So you obviously sold some shoes to some pretty cool people. And I know you sold, you have a cool story about selling a pair of crepes to Lil Yachty. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so it wasn't just one pair. So Lil Yachty, actually, the very start was also pretty cool, like how I got in touch with him a few years before the real good story. But he was doing an Instagram live with I think it was with Offset, and they were showing each other's sneaker collections. And so I tuned in, and one of the guys that I follow, like we follow each other, this guy named Corey, young Corey on Instagram, I saw he commented on the live. It was during COVID, you know, live Instagram lives were huge.
Yeah, yeah.
And I saw like Yachty acknowledging like, yo, what's up, Corey, or something. I was like, oh, so they're tight. So I messaged Corey and I was like, yo, bro, do you think you could, hit up Yachty? I think he'll mess with my stuff. So he did. And, maybe an hour later, Lil Yachty hit me up like, yo, wow, what you got for me or something. So that was like the first introduction, first purchase he made. I think he bought 8 pairs in one go. And, obviously very nice selection, rare stuff.
Yeah.
He knows his shit,
for sure.
And he likes to be also a bit different. So it's not going to be like the traditional SBs. He already has those, but like a bit more niche stuff that I really love as well. And so he's bought for me a few times over that time span, like 2 years. And then actually a year, so not last summer before, he was in London. I think it was like Wireless Festival or something. I was at the festival he was performing. And my friend who works at Kick Game hit me, so I see he tries calling me like at 8 p.m. and Yachty had already performed in the afternoon, and I'm at the festival enjoying my time with my brother and everything, and I'm like, I'll reply later, like it's time to enjoy, not think about work, I'll call him back later. And then I call him back like an hour later, and he's like, bro, like was trying to call you, Yachty's pulling up to the store because he shot that Kick Game video. Sneaker shopping, and he was like, would have been great to have you and like bring some really cool stuff, because Kick Game mostly do the more mainstream things. So I was like, fuck, I missed the opportunity. I had never met Yachty at that point yet, and like it would have been just a sick kind of moment. And I was just so frustrated that I didn't pick up the call, or that I didn't make myself available. And I just remember like one of my friends telling me like, it's just a matter of time. Like, you'll have another opportunity. If you had this opportunity, you'll have another one. Like, don't, stress about it. And then 1 year later, Yachty was back in London again, like concert tour or whatever. And this time I'm like, do you want to pull up to my spot, like check out the shoes and everything? So he did. He came with a bodyguard and a random friend of his, like this American foreign exchange student who lives in London, like this kid who was in his high school, like they're old friends, this random guy, and go into my stock rooms, and before, so I'm like, okay, so this is my section with like your size 10, 10 and a half. And he's like, before anything, let me give you the cash that I owe you, because he still owed me like a couple thousand for his last purchase. And I'm like, oh cool, like and he gives me the cash, and I'm like, I appreciate you, because like he made that gesture first, like before anything else, let me get this straight first. And I'm like, oh, appreciate you. And he's like, nah, I appreciate you. So that was really cool. And then he wasn't, he still had that vibe of like, he's on the phone or like checking his phone as I show him the shoes, like you know, he's still a star and has that attitude. But he was, that was a very genuine moment. And then he picked out four pairs of kicks that were quite specific, all of them super vintage, like 1992 Air Force One, 1985 Convention, 1987 Air Dunk, like a super rare version of a dunk and everything. Four pairs, did the deal, didn't negotiate or anything, paid me in cash. And then like, I was kind of a more chill because I was like, okay, the business side of things is done. Like, and I'm like, do you play 2K? Because I've seen him post stories of he's like, sometimes he plays 2K while he's at an NBA game. Like it's
crazy.
And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, are you, you know, do you have to go anywhere or are you chilling? And he's like, I'm chilling. And I'm like, should we play? He's like, let's do it. So we played a game of 2K. I was up the whole game, trash talking, because like at that point I was like, okay, we're chilling now, trash talking, like it was quite fun. And then I'm like up 2 points, 3 seconds left or something, my possession. So I'm like, I'm gonna like turn it over, give you the ball, give you an opportunity to tie the game. And he tied the game at the buzzer. So he was like, yeah, and everything. And then overtime, and I beat him in overtime.
Sick.
So that was a cool moment. And then he left. My brother is a huge Lil Yachty fan, and like just the fact that came to my actual place and like sat on my couch.
Genuine,
and
like it seems
genuine. Yeah. And it was like a fun moment to share, and that, you know, also goes beyond just, you know, business. I'm not saying that I'm, you know, friends with Lil Yachty, but it's just cool to have real life interactions and kind of connections with people that are obviously up there in their fields and that are looked up to. And especially even in the sneaker space, like he, not just hip hop, Lil Yachty is one of the, you know, the real ones in terms of collections, knowledge, passion. So that was really a cool moment.
Crazy, man. It's nice to hear stuff like that, because you would imagine like people like him who are right at the top, you do hear some kind of like horror stories about, not him individually, but like big celebrities and big rappers being just like dicks. It's nice to hear that he gave just chill, man. Just like a really normal guy. Sick. So I know you've also sold crepes to Chloe Moretz.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, so that was pretty random. Like, I'm not too connected to like the acting world. Yeah. Like, it's much less of an industry that I interact with than like hip hop and sports. But Chloe Moretz is one of those, you know, super low key but high key sneakerheads. She follows like the relevant people in the space that do cool shit, and like she supports them. Like, she's shouted me out a few times. And it's not like I'm seeding free stuff like to get shout outs. Like, she genuinely interacts. Like, sometimes she responds to stories. I mean, less so recently, but there was a time that she was really, really big into, well, she probably still is, just interacting less with my content, RIP, but she, really genuine sneakerhead. Like, she looks for specific things and likes having something different, the vintage stuff, and very genuine person as well. And you wouldn't think, I don't know, like, you know, she...
Yeah, you would never get up.
Pretty... surprising, but really cool, and you can see that she follows a lot of people in the sneaker space.
That's
so
sick.
It's dope. Yeah.
So when someone like her, does she just DM you, or do you reach out to her?
I think I probably saw something, because otherwise I didn't really know of her, to be honest.
For sure.
Probably seen maybe like Complex Sneakers or something posting or an outfit where she's wearing a cool pair of sneakers or something. So I messaged her. Like, yo, you know, let me...
And she gets back to that.
And the crazy thing is, I remember specifically that she got back to me like a few months later. So like, I think I had messaged her like in maybe December 2020 or something. Yeah. And she got back to me like in February of the following year. And I was just super surprised that, because you would think if a celebrity does get back to you, it's because they saw your request, like in your their recent request, and you know they just happened to see your DM then,
yeah,
and they respond. But like 3 months later, like she must have so many DMs.
Yeah, yeah, it's no way she's scrolling through that.
Maybe she actually found my page another way wanted to and saw that I had messaged her, because I'd actually be surprised that she scrolled through thousands of DMs and stumbled across mine. So, but I did reach out first.
Well, no shame in that, man. That's
cool, no shame.
That's sick, man. Sick.
Yeah.
Cool. So Dennis has brought in some of the rarest pairs he owns. They're absolutely crazy. So bro, do you want to talk us through a few of them?
Yeah, so first ones that I wanted to show kind of where everything started. 1985 Jordan 1 Chicago. And I brought this one as well, which is the 1984 Airship, which is the actual first shoe that Michael Jordan wore before the Jordan 1. So I thought it made sense to kind of show them together, because this is kind of the younger brother of the Jordan 1 that MJ wore kind of while he was waiting for the Jordan 1 to
spot it all off. Yeah.
Yeah.
So talk us through, what is the value of the Airship now, like this OG?
So it's one of those pairs that's quite difficult to price. Like there's no market. It's unfindable. I'm confident that I can sell it for $10,000. I wouldn't sell it for less. It's the type of pairs that will only go up in value in terms of rarity and historical value, especially. And this specific colorway is the colorway that MJ wore. He only wore this one and the black and red colorway of the Airship, which was the real band shoe, by the way. Not the Jordan 1. Because when the whole band thing happened with the NBA, the Jordan 1 hadn't been, released or even worn by Michael Jordan yet. So the Airship is the silhouette that was, not the silhouette that was banned, but the bread Airship was the pair that was banned. And that was the other colorway. And then obviously the 85 Chicago. Also, what's really cool about this specific pair is it's a size 13.
Yeah.
Which is Michael Jordan's size. So that's why I kind of chose to bring a size 13. Makes it definitely even more valuable, not only because it's a rare size, big size, but also because it has that historical value of being the size that Michael Jordan wore.
Yeah.
So that's a very cool.
So what is set. The value on the 85s?
I'd say... It depends on the condition. I mean, this one isn't the cleanest. I'd say maybe between like $4,000 and $5,000. A DS pair of size 13 85s would be at least $25,000.
Yeah,
for sure. Because it's a size 13. Regular DS pairs go for $15,000 to $25,000, depending on whether you have the original hang tag, the original box. The box alone sells for $2,000.
Wow.
Like, in order to then complete the set.
Yeah.
It which will increase the value by obviously more than $2,000. So
that's crazy.
So yeah, but 85 Chicagos are the most common 85 Jordan 1 colorway. It's not something you can't find. And it's not something that people can't afford. Like, it's you can buy $2,000 1985 Chicagos in like size 9, 10, 11 in worn condition, and that's cheaper than like an off-white Chicago, you know.
That's true.
And the historical value is pretty crazy.
Wow, man.
Yeah, and it's wearable and everything, so
beautiful.
Yeah,
beautiful. And you've got a couple more.
So these two pairs are Reeboks. Over the past year and a half, I really got into specific niche of Reeboks, which are the Ice Creams and the Sean Carter's S Dots. So the Sean Carter is Jay-Z's, personal kind of silhouette that was made in collaboration with Jay-Z's Sean Carter, obviously his name. And this pair is one of the four colorways of the Kanye West College Dropout samples. So there's about, and this is the, my favorite colorway of all of them.
Beautiful.
And this is in Kanye's size. The box says promo sample made for Kanye West. And there's about 50 pairs of each colorway in existence.
Wow. That's crazy, man.
And this is the type of stuff that I really love in terms of, you know, storytelling, just something you don't see every day, and still very, very cool story around them.
So what is the value and when did these release?
Same thing, 2006. So same thing, very, very difficult to say, but like realistically, I'd say between $6,000 and $8,000.
Beautiful.
I wish they were worth more, but just because you look at like College Dropout Bapestas, which are much more available than the Sean Carters, they go like a DS pair is going to be between $8,000 and $12,000 for the College Dropout Bapestas.
Yeah.
This is so much rarer. This is just, you can't find this. College Dropout, if you can afford it, you can't find it. And it's not worth as much just because people don't know as much about it.
People are going to be looking
for it less, and there's going to be just a bit less hype around it, but still super cool. And then the whole ice cream line, I've been pretty big on it as well since about a year. There's so many cool colorways. This is not my favorite. I couldn't find my favorite one. My favorite one is kind of a reverse. It's the watermelon colorway, which is green and pink, kind of reverse without the piss yellow.
but bold. Yeah, they're bold.
It's obviously attached to Pharrell Williams and Ice Cream, Billionaire Boys Club.
Mm.
And from 2004 to 2007, Pharrell had his line with Reebok as well. Well, not really his line. It's more his brand's line, because it doesn't say Pharrell on it. It says Ice Cream.
Yeah.
But I think super underappreciated silhouette. I think it's like the skateboard version of the Adidas Samba in terms of shape.
Yeah, for sure.
And just very funky colorways.
Yeah.
And same thing. I love that kind of stuff. Just showing people what's out there and that people don't necessarily know about because it's old and not as hype as like the more recognizable SBs and things like that from the time.
Yeah, and they've got such the rarity is, you said, it's not a traditional sneaker. It is like a form of art that kind of, in that kind of world, which fascinates me. So interesting, man. It's so interesting.
And the ice creams, unlike the Sean Carters, which were a sample. So Sean Carters were an inline model. Just this specific with the bear, those are samples. But the ice creams were super available, a super available line. They were selling at outlets, you know, for like $30 back
so
in the
like
day.
So like getting hold of a sample pair, how hard is that?
So this one I got from like a guy who works in the music industry, who's from Chicago, and probably has had connects over the years like ended up with them. And like, you know, you make connections through, you know, common people, you know, they know that I'm looking for a pair. Someone knows where it is, put the collector in touch with me. And then, you know,
different.
I don't have any secret, you know, like, I think, some people get those plugs and like with like Nike employees or things like that. I don't have that, you know. It's more like just digging in and connections.
Yeah, networking, I imagine, is a huge part of getting hold of stuff like this.
Yeah, for sure.
And you got another pair?
And this is the last one. So super cool. This colorway only released as a kid's size in 2004, Flame Dunk Low. Nice. But this is actually a size 10.5, and it's a promo sample. So it never released in men's sizes. So it's one of the only pairs out there in, you know, men's size.
Yeah, I like these.
And I have the original box with the sample tag as well on there. And actually, I don't know if you've followed that, gallery department just had a collab with Vans.
Yeah, so that. Yeah.
So the cool story about that is that the guy, Josue, who's the guy behind gallery department, he's bought a few pairs from me over the years. And I posted these like a year ago. And he asked me if I could find a pair in his size. And I told him it's, you know, there's only samples. Yeah, yeah. But I had a pair in women's size. And he bought it for his girlfriend. And then 6 months later or something, he told me he had a collab coming up with Vans. And he showed me one of the pairs is exactly like this.
Wow, of
and
course,
he yeah. sent me the pair of Vans. So now it's like one of my favorite pairs in my collection because, you know, it has that. I know where the inspo comes from. And it's... straight from this dunk, you know.
Yeah, this is really nice. I feel like with a kind of flame design, it's really on the border of being quite cringe sometimes. But I think with the metallic swoosh and the
contrast white stitching,
yeah, and the inner red matching with the flame, it's really clean, man.
Yeah,
like really, really nice.
Yeah, and the cool story around this specific pair that I just actually bought like a few weeks ago when I was in the US, because I've had a few of the kids sizes, like size sevens, that's the biggest size, but a men's sample, I recently purchased this one. And actually I was bugging this guy for so long, like to sell it to me. I was on the flight to San Francisco like a couple of weeks ago, and we were closing the deal. Like I got Wi-Fi on the plane just so I, you know, I'm able to still work on the plane.
Yeah.
And I was about to, you know, PayPal him, and then I'm like, just out of curiosity, like, where are you based? Because I buy most of my shoes in the U.S.
Yeah.
And he's like, Bay Area, and I'm like, bro, I'm landing in San Francisco in 2 hours. And he's like, oh, sick. Like, I'll pick you up and like, let's do it in person. So I landed in San Francisco and this guy came like with his, you know, his wife was driving the car. His daughter was in the back seat and like picked me up from the airport. Super nice family, drove me to my hotel and like, you know, made the deal happen in person. And there's that kind of story around it as well. So, and he's had it for like 10 years and bought it for $250 10 years ago. Wow. You know, random eBay steal.
Yeah.
And now like I, you know, obviously paid a much more hefty price, but it's worth it because of the rarity and
that's
how fire it is. But
did we touch on the value? Because I was too busy looking at the shoe to pay attention.
In terms of value, same thing. Very, very tough to say. Depends. Like, this is the type of thing you could auction off at Sotheby's. It's not going to go crazy, crazy. Like, it's not going to go for like 10,000 or anything. But I think it could go for five. You know, it could go for four. So that's what I'm hoping. We'll see.
Sick, bro. Well, thanks for bringing them in, man. Yeah, they are absolutely crazy. I mean, yeah, the dunks are something special. Sweet. So I know another big thing in the space at the moment, and something that I've had problems with before, and I imagine is a really big thing when you're dealing with expensive pairs like yourself and big name clients. How do you legit check, or what is the process?
Yeah. So, again, quite specific to my niche. Fortunately, it's a niche where you don't really get much fakes. It happens, but it's quite easy to spot because fakes weren't as good back then. It's much more difficult. Like, you can't fake a 20-year-old sneaker right now. Like, I would tell immediately in terms of materials, the tag, like something's going to, you know, especially when you deal with so many pairs over time, you know, you just, you know, something's
so
off,
different,
you know? So, and I've actually never actually seen, or had in hand a new fake of an old shoe. I've had a few old fakes, because fakes have always been a thing, but they're just not as good. So it's not something that's really part of my activity, like legit checking, just because it's quite easy to spot.
A little different
if it ever happens. Well, and because the vintage and the collectors community is it's so much more niche than the mainstream sneaker space, that you're gonna have much less scamming going on.
Yes.
It's people who genuinely care about this stuff that are gonna get into depths like these pairs, you know. So fortunately, I'm in a niche where I don't have to worry too much about
that. That's cool. I love that, because the lady behind the camera who helps me with Kicks Force and the rest of our team, so when we sell it, when we're buying our shoes, bro, it's a big problem, man.
I can imagine. And I don't like with recent stuff, I couldn't tell you. Mm-hmm. I couldn't do a legit check. I stay away from recent stuff.
It's so hard, man. We have to pay for, I mean, it's for the best, really. We make sure everyone, we don't sell any fakes, but we pay a decent whack per shoe to get them legit checked.
Yeah.
And the lads who work for me and myself as well are pretty okay, are pretty decent at it, but it's a full-time job.
You have to really dig into it with like lights and like...
Yeah. And I mean, I do a lot of videos on like, covering like fake shoes and like kind of what's happening in the space. Definitely not promoting them at all, but like checking out what people are doing, what people like my age and younger are doing to acquire cool shoes when they aren't real. And a lot of the stuff we're looking into, mate, is just crazy. Like the manufacturers who create these fakes, they buy the shoe and they copy it from head to toe. It's genuinely terrifying how close it looks, man.
Yeah.
It's wild out there.
Another reason why I get into, you know, the old stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's a safer industry. There's more money to be made, I think. It's an industry that brings together people who actually care. It's just a great space to be in. And I know how challenging it can be with like legit checking stuff and the risks of selling fakes and everything. Like, it's just not something I want to be a part
of. Yeah, because we speak about it all the time. We're like, bro, we can't. We have to legit check head to toe. Yeah. Because if I sell one fake, it would be a complete accident, obviously. But if Kicks Force was to sell a fake, it'd be like, one, it like fucks over the customer, which is really, really wrong. But two, there could be like it takes one video to basically slander the entire business. Rightfully so, if we were to sell a fake, obviously completely wrong.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're so close just to...
I mean, like, if it's... I think errors are inevitable, to be honest. Like, if you think about it, StockX is... there is no reason why StockX would not be careful with fakes. And the fact that fakes go through StockX, I'm not blaming StockX.
No, of course.
You know, I think that StockX is getting way too bad of a rap because 100%, of 100%. All the industry leaders in the space, StockX is by far the leader. Like, you know, everyone goes to StockX to check prices, to buy shoes if they don't find them anywhere else. And like... there's no reason why they wouldn't be at the top of their, you know, game in terms of legit checking. If they still make mistakes, it means that everyone can make mistakes and that it's a very dangerous game out there.
Yeah.
You know,
it's human error, you know.
Yeah.
But when all the StockX stuff came out, they put out a statement. I can't remember the amount of shoes that go through their services, but it is millions and millions. Yeah. It's literally
product,
insane. And they do have to hire people, and those people, you know, they're humans and they could simply make a mistake. Yeah. Something just could so small could go wrong. And then all it takes is this public exposure. Because when you're right at the top, everyone's watching. And that's any industry.
Yeah. To me, the key here is if you do make a mistake, is to make up for it in the best possible way. And that's where StockX, I think, could do a better job. Because like I got a pair that was clearly damaged, like legit and everything. But like that should not have passed the thing because it had scratches like on a few places on the pair and everything. I was actually shocked that they passed it because I remember having a few pairs denied because like the box had a slight rip. Yeah. And I'm like, how did this go through?
Yeah.
And then when I emailed customer service, they offered me a $60 voucher and it was like a $900 pair. And I'm like, that's the problem.
Yeah.
Because that's where the customer service should be like, especially StockX. I mean, you're turning over millions of dollars. That's where you should be like, you know what? We'll refund you half of the pair, you know, or give you a voucher of half of the value of the pair, not like $60 on a $900 purchase. But as long as you acknowledge your mistakes and make up for them, I think, legit checking is tough and like gotta be... you know, honest, it's a human error is always possible. So
on the subject of like middleman authenticating, how do you feel about eBay? Because obviously that came out a couple of years ago now, maybe two years ago.
Yeah.
And obviously then they're like bringing a pre-loved authentication has made a huge improvement to my life, but just from personal and from business.
Yeah. 100%.
And they are like from my experience, they're really, really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what
yeah, no, I love it. I love it. I think it's great because eBay, I barely caught the pre-authenticity guarantee days because I've only been in the game for like almost 4 years now. Yeah. So like maybe I caught like a year and a half of that and then they started the authenticity thing. But if you think about it, eBay was kind of like the Wild West before. Still a safe space when you're buying vintage stuff because what I said, but like... you can't legit check a pair from photos. So it's super important. I think it's a no-brainer that they did that. And
now let's see, I've got a lot of time for them because I have worked with them. I ran a campaign with them last year when they were sick. But also I think they've tried to call me throughout this podcast. So we buy a lot of kicks from there and they phone you up when something doesn't pass.
They email you or email you like asking, is that like cool? Like the box has this problem or it's missing the laces or something. Yeah. And
I really respect that, man. Yeah. And that's what the whole like community is built on, I think, is just communication.
Yeah. Shout out Wahaj.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's sick. That's sick, man. So, bro, you have a brand coming out called Outsole. Yeah. Do you want to run me through it?
Yeah. So the brand actually has been, I started the brand 2.5 years ago, but I took like a year break because, I just had to focus on my main business and kind of rekindle a few things. But the brand is called Outsole, spelled S-O-U-L, not S-O-L-E. The logo is the bottom of the dunk. So like the circles with the line, I don't actually have it, here, but, sorry. And the concept is kind of telling cool stories from the good age, the good times of, from sneaker culture, through, I'd say like a sort of bootleg-ish thing. So like right now I'm rocking a PlayStation. We're bringing a PlayStation-inspired collection.
That's cool. Yeah,
the link with sneakers obviously is the PlayStation Air Force One.
Yeah.
This cap full gray is a nod to the PlayStation One, you know, being this color. The pieces in the collection are either like inspired from the PlayStation Air Force One or elements from the PlayStation. And the logo obviously says OS for Outsole instead of PS for PlayStation. And I've had a few collections like inspired from, you know, 1985 with like black and red themes and like just cool chapters from sneaker history. Paying tribute to that and creating something new. So coming soon and really trying to make a real push with the brand because I think there's a lot of potential in terms of storytelling and design kind of
ideas. Nice to hear there's a kind of core foundation pushing it, like the whole idea of capturing and rekindling moments that have happened in the past.
Yeah, and really so even the logo obviously being based on the soul of you're not gonna, I was gonna say like show the soul of the,
oh yeah, we could do it. I could take my shoes off.
So the circle here, this is kind of the base of the logo.
Sick.
And sneaker culture really started in 1985 with the Jordan 1 and the Dunk coming out that same year. And it only made sense to have that as a logo because it's at the soul of the those historic shoes, represents that whole kind of part of sneaker yeah. culture and is a good kind of general logo for the brand. So yeah, the whole idea is just to create sneaker related products without it being tacky, number one, because it doesn't say, you know, like I'm a sneakerhead. It's more subtle. Yeah, it's inspirations and you don't have to necessarily buy like a PlayStation Air Force One to rock something that
has that brand
alludes to that.
So
exciting stuff coming soon. Stay tuned.
Sick, man. Well, you have to keep me posted,
yeah,
bro.
I will stay posted for sure.
I think that about wraps us up. So big up Sneaker Den. Thanks, Connor, man.
Thank
it's been
so
a really
much.
Real pleasure. You really know your stuff. So it's been sick. I've learned a lot. I thought that was always going to happen. And big up for bringing the stuff in, man. I know they're very expensive pairs. Thank you so much
for having me as your first
guest. Yeah, bro. There will be some more guests as well. Hopefully, it's going to become like a weekly guest format. Because like I said before, it was a solo pod. And bro, it was hard. Like probably one of the hardest things I've ever done is just sitting here rekindling all the information. Because you can't like cut. It's not like when I came into this, I thought it was going to be like a TikTok type video thing where I could be like, or a YouTube video where I could be like, well, you know, the release date is the 7th of November. And then I'll be like, look at my phone, look at the script. Nope. Just keep waffling. I have to know everything. But this is good, man. So yeah, every Monday, 6 p.m., Spotify, YouTube, all streaming platforms. Please watch it so I do not need to get a proper job. And yeah, man, it's been a pleasure. Big love for the support. And I'll see you Monday, 6 p.m.